thanks for watching this video. It's on Hebrews chapter 1 and it's part of a series on the book of Hebrews that we're doing in the Thames Valley Churches of Christ in January and February 2018. Today, I'm introducing you to the most impressive person I know. I hope you enjoy what you're about to hear.
Okay, who found out something impressive about somebody? Chonty, tell me about who and what.
She's actually, she was a national sportswoman for South Africa.
Really? National, in what? Rhythmic gymnastics. My goodness, wow. I mean, I could have done that if I wanted to, but you know, I just couldn't be bothered. But that's impressive. Wow, that's amazing. Fantastic. Okay, what else? Miko?
Talked to Don, and he's played in a band in Wembley in front of 2,000 people.
No way. Oh. 2,000 people. Well, that is impressive. I am impressed. 2,000 people, wow. Excellent. Okay, something else, somebody else. You've got a...
Ashley swam three quarters underwater.
Say that again.
Swam.
Yes.
Three-quarter length underwater.
Three-quarters of a length underwater.
Two and three-quarter
lengths.
Wow.
That's still a long way. My goodness, I can hold your breath that long and swim. My goodness, that I'm impressed. I am impressed. I'm seriously impressed. Okay, more. Okay, what else? Anything else sort of impressive about anybody we spoke to? No? I've got, Roman's got one. So when you've been through a lot, to offer care and love for other people is very impressive, given that some people would get bitter or just withdraw. So to continue to give is truly impressive and Christ-like, actually. Super, thank you. Any more? One or two more? Yeah.
Pip is very loyal, which I think is one of the most impressive things ever. It's simple, but you know, when you get someone who's loyal, it's
oh, doesn't it warm your heart when you know someone who's loyal? Pip, you are loyal. It's true. And that is very impressive. Maybe we've got time for one more. If anybody, oh, we got some more hands. Okay, we'll go one, two, three, and then we'll be done. So one.
Okay, Mike has participated in a couple of marathon races.
A marathon.
Yeah.
Now you see, Mike's discounting that. He's saying only one. I'm like, only one marathon. I'm sorry. I'm impressed. Excellent. Thank you very much. Who was next? Obi.
So,
Jerome,
I spoke to him. He's quite musical. He plays the piano. So, we might just get him up.
Yeah. Excellent. It's true. No, it's true. He plays better than me. I've heard him.
Oh, wow.
Oh, it's true. Absolutely. I'm retiring as of now. Good. Excellent. And then Brenda, yes.
I'm very impressed with Tony, my son-in-law, because he gets up very early in the morning. He walks down to the station early. He goes to London and gets home at 8 o'clock in the evening. And then he still goes to church on Friday evening, even though he's really tired. Dedication.
I'm impressed too. And I have to say, you don't get anything better than impressing your mother-in-law. That is... that is truly heroic. I don't have to say anything else. Nobody here can top that. All right, I do want to introduce you to somebody that I'm impressed with. Let us go on to that next slide. This on the picture there is my sister. Now, my sister is one of the most impressive people I personally know. You see her there having coming off the rugby pitch, having played rugby. She played rugby at a very good level for a local side down in Kent. She didn't pick up the game until she was in her 30s and only started playing, her sister and her daughter started playing, and they actually played in the same team. I'm 57 next month. I won't tell you her age, but she is younger than me, but not much, and she gave up playing rugby only very recently, and she's been she's fit as a fiddle, and she not only plays rugby really well, but she also looks gorgeous, and I don't know how that all works, but she's an amazing person, and she has a lot of other incredible qualities. She's bringing up her husband's granddaughter. She has a second marriage, and so this is her step granddaughter. So she's bringing up her step granddaughter, who's 4 years old, as her own child. She's the legal, she and her husband are legal guardians for the child. So at my 50s, I'm happy to look after young children for a few minutes and then hand them back to other people. But my sister is looking after a young child until she has to leave home. You know, it's going to be a long time, and I'm very impressed. And there are so many other things I could tell you about, but the reason I want to mention her is I got a phone call from her on New Year's Day, and she rang me, and I thought she was ringing me to say Happy New Year, and that's excellent, and she did, but she said, I have to something to tell you, and I said, what is it? She said, I've been awarded an MBE.
Wow.
And I said, what, really? And she said, yeah, I knew 3 weeks ago, but I couldn't tell anybody. I saw her over Christmas. She didn't tell me. She said, yeah, I've been awarded an MBE. Wow. I said, wow. And she until recently, she worked for a charity dealing with children in difficulty, and teenagers especially, in families that were having difficulties. And she did work with families and their children, trying to help them to stay together and work through their difficult times. And she's done that place, I think, for 15, 16, 17 years. She's had a profound impact on countless numbers of children and families all through Kent. She's made a huge difference, and she was put up, suggested for an award, and she's going up to the palace sometime in the spring to get an MBE. And I was so delighted for her, and I'm already impressed with my sister.
Yeah.
But now I can tell everybody, I have a sister who has an MBE.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that, you know, I feel some of the glory reflect on me, because obviously I'm the older brother and helped her, you know, to become the person she is today. My sister inspires me, and we all have people in our lives that inspire us. But we get off the mark when we lose the sense of how much Jesus can inspire us.
Yeah.
And how much more impressive he is than anybody you've met, anybody you've ever heard of. So let's have a look here in Hebrews chapter 1. And as most of us here will know, we are beginning our teaching and preaching series through the book of Hebrews. We kicked off with the introductory class on Friday night, and if you missed that, it's been recorded, and is it already online? Johnson, yes it is, thank you very much, it's online. And if you didn't manage to get one of the copies of the booklets, they all ran out, but you can download a PDF from the website. Thanks to Johnson for putting it up there. So search the website and you'll find the PDF there, and you can download it with all the extra detail. And there's a lot, and if you've got your booklet with you, you'll be able to follow along with what we're talking about today, although I'm not going to do all the detail. I want to talk more about the big picture here, about how impressive Jesus is. Let's have a look here in chapter 1. In the past, God spoke to our ancestors through the prophets many times and in various ways. But in these last days, he has spoken to us by his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things, and through whom he made the universe. The Son is the radiance of God's glory and the exact representation of his being, sustaining all things by his powerful word. After he had provided purification for sins, he sat down at the right hand of the majesty in heaven. So he became as much superior to the angels as the name he has inherited is superior to theirs. For to which of the angels did God ever say, "You are my son, today I have become your father"? Or again, "I will be his father and he will be my son"? And again, when God brings his firstborn into the world, he says, "Let all God's angels worship him." In speaking of the angels, he says, "He makes his angels spirits and his servants flames of fire." But about the Son, he says, "Your throne, O God, will last forever and ever. A scepter of justice will be the scepter of your kingdom.
You have loved righteousness and hated wickedness. Therefore, God, your God, has set you above your companions by anointing you with the oil of joy. He also says, in the beginning, Lord, you laid the foundations of the earth, and the heavens are the work of your hands. They will perish, but you remain. They will all wear out like a garment. You will roll them up like a robe. Like a garment they will be changed, but you remain the same, and your years will never end. To which of the angels did God ever say, sit at my right hand until I make your enemies a footstool for your feet? Are not all angels ministering spirits sent to serve those who will inherit salvation? So we've got a contrast here between Jesus and the angels. And if you know the book of Hebrews, you know that the writer is going to go on and compare Jesus and contrast Jesus with other figures from the Old Testament. And we'll talk about that another time. So we've got Jesus being talked about as the heir of all things, and as he's made the universe, the radiance of God's glory, he's incredible. And I think that would be enough. We could stop there, but we haven't got time today, so let's go on. Talk about the importance of communication. So we had the prophets, he says, and we had the ancestors. God spoke to our ancestors through the prophets many times in various ways, and that's nice. You get that idea from the Old Covenant, the Old Testament, that God spoke through the prophets. But these last days, he spoke through his son. Personal communication is so important. It matters, doesn't it? I don't know about you, but I don't mind getting a letter from the council or the government or something, as long as they're not asking me for money. But it's very different from a letter from a friend or a card from a friend. And that personal stuff matters. It makes such a difference to the quality of the communication and the feeling we have about it. And he says, before, God spoke through the prophets. Now he's speaking through his son. Let me show that next slide, because I was walking through the woods a little while ago, and I found these things. Actually, go back one. There was I found this sort of this plastic piece there, put on a tree, a piece of ribbon, and on the next slide, a sort of a sports cone that you use for marking off sports areas, a tea bag was put in the branches of this tree, and some kind of token. And then the next slide, and then I found a piece of paper in a plastic wallet that was sealed from the rain and the moisture, and it had on it what it says there, to Neil and Rich and Ridley and a bunch of other people, dated 2011. And on the other side was this letter. Let's have a look at this little letter here. Howdy, y'all. Now, where do you think this person might be from? I don't know, Michelle. Howdy, y'all. By the time you're reading this, I will have hopefully landed safely in Calgary and began settling in. Even though I have 7,058 kilometers away from you guys, and it's only about 5:30 a.m. here, I want to take the opportunity to thank you all for the kindness that you've shown me over the short time that we've known each other. So long, my friends. I will definitely be thing of you often. Love, Mike. P.S. Take care of this special decorated tree. What can you work out from that, by the way, about that person and why that was written there? Anything? What do you see? What do you learn? Who wrote it and why?
They're grateful.
Gratitude seems to have motivated the writing of the letter. Anything else? So, a joy? Okay, they care about people. Yep.
He wants to be remembered.
Wants to be remembered.
And then he's got a group of friends that he's naming and talking directly to.
Okay, very specific, isn't it, Rich?
To me, it's the physical location doesn't matter. It's the connected, regardless of where
you are. Yeah, super. Yeah, thank you. We know the writer is
male.
Right, it's not Michelle, it's Mike. Okay, so it's male, his name is Mike. He's moved from, this was near London, this wood. So let's say he probably lived in London for a while at least, moved back to Calgary. Could be from Calgary, maybe. Yeah, okay. Probably on the young side. I'm saying that because of the handwriting. Doesn't look like my handwriting, which is, as I get older, it gets worse and worse. Actually, quite nice handwriting. has probably a sports person because of the sports cone. Not English, you'd assume, even if they wasn't English. It could have been an English person who's moved away, but the fact that they stuck a tea bag in the woods, I think means it's not their normal drink. Yeah. Right? Yeah. A few other things? Anything else, Mika?
I find it quite interesting that he uses metric system.
Oh, kilometres. How interesting. Okay, so what does that mean, I wonder? I don't know. Because there's miles in the States and there's miles here. Perhaps they're a European who's gone to Calgary. Very good English. Sounds like a native English speaker, I think, probably. Yeah, Michelle.
Well, I think the where it says the kindness that you're showing over the short time.
Okay.
The impact that was made over that he would do that for people that he's on the very long time.
Something deep going on here, isn't there? You know, it's interesting. A short note like that, you can learn a lot about the person who wrote it and about the people it's written to, about the circumstances. We know the date. We know when. We know the woods must have been important to them. If he's left it, I don't know. I mean, I was walking through the woods praying and I just came across it, not on a path. I mean, like walking between trees. It's a very strange thing to come across. But you can tell a lot about things. When we read the Bible, and this is kind of a, not quite a side point, but it's an important thing. The way we read the Bible matters as to what, how much we get out of it, and whether we really learn what it's teaching us. And one of the things to remember about a letter is that it's written to people in a given circumstance and in a given time with given particular issues. And as you read the book of Hebrews this month and next month, as we're doing this as a church, I want to encourage you to do a little bit of detective work. Read, as you read, think, why did they write that? It's written in Hebrews, that's not written in Philippians, or it's not written in Galatians. Doesn't mean it wasn't important to anybody else, but this particular issue that's written there must have been important to them. Why was it written? Why was it so important? And that will help us in our personal Bible study. But the main point I wanted to bring across is, this is really important for this person to write this letter and put it there. And it was meaningful to him, and it was meaningful to the people to whom it was written. And Jesus was sent so that we would understand God in a way that was impossible to understand unless he came. How do you really understand God? You must understand Jesus. The Old Covenant and the Old Testament tell us a lot, but if we don't fix our eyes on Jesus, as we're told to in Hebrews, if we don't fix our thoughts on Jesus, as we're told to in Hebrews, we will not understand God. And sometimes we get confused with what God is doing. Mika alluded earlier to sad and difficult times we might have had this last year. And whether it's congregationally we've had some sad times or difficult times, or you personally have had some difficult times. Some of us here have faced illness of significance or financial challenges. Some of us, perhaps you've been made redundant, had to look for new work. Perhaps you're struggling even now. We don't know quite what God has in mind for Johnson and Sicily, as they look like you may have to go back to India. And we're praying that that doesn't, please God, no. We want to keep you. But that's an uncertainty in our future. Some of you have uncertainty about your own life or people you care about. And we can get confused. Well, God, what are you doing? And I'm not sure whether God always reveals what he's doing. Doesn't seem like it from Scripture. But if we keep our eyes on Jesus, we remain clear about the character of God. We remain clear about the heart of God, which means that in the midst of our confusion, we can hold on to our faith in God because we know what God is like, because we've seen what Jesus is, who Jesus is. And that helps us to stay faithful even while we're confused or in pain. I want to encourage us as we study the book of Hebrews to really ask ourselves, what am I learning about Jesus? And let that reveal to us more of who God is. It's amazing that, well, not amazing, but I find it very impressive, that the writer to the Hebrews knows what the problems are in the people's lives he's writing to. The church has issues. But most of it is in Hebrews 13. I mean, not all of it, it's dotted throughout the book, but by the time you get to chapter 13, he begins more of a list of things about don't do this and make sure you do that and don't forget this and make sure you do that and don't do that. And you've got a lot of that there, but we've got 12 chapters of build-up all about Jesus. And this is so important in our own lives. That we don't get shallow into, I've got problems, I must just do this or this or that. We must fix our eyes on Jesus. Only if we've got him front and center and clear in our view, will we be able to make wise decisions about what to do with our parenting and the struggles we have with our son or our daughter, or what to do in our marriage as we struggle. Sometimes, husband and wife, even as Christians, it has been known, husbands and wives have struggles. And although we're not in each other's lives to fix each other, that's just a warning and a freebie. We're not in each other's lives to fix each other, but we are in each other's lives to influence one another. And how do we do that in the right way? Well, a lot of that is fixing our eyes on Jesus. We want to help people in the congregation. We want to help people become Christians. We want to help people who've drifted from God to come back to God. It's all about first fixing our eyes on Jesus. And the writer does this here where he gets us focused on Jesus, those first four verses, before he talks about the angels and how much superior Jesus is to them. Jesus is amazing. I hope you're still amazed by Jesus. You know, that's kind of one of those things where if that slips, we might as well just stop there and focus on that. Maybe you're not amazed at the church anymore. I don't know. Sometimes I think the church is amazing, and sometimes we can be quite problematic. That's the nature of who we are, right? Maybe you're not amazed at the church anymore. Okay, fine. Maybe you're not amazed at the songs we sing or something. I don't know. Maybe you're not amazed at yourself anymore. Maybe there's many other things you're not so amazed at. But if you're still amazed at Jesus, and most other things will either just work out, or if they don't work out, you won't be so bothered. Because you've still got Jesus and he's still amazing. I think a good way to stay amazed at Jesus is to pray through these first four verses. Maybe that's something to do this week. Take a day, one of your prayer times this week, and pray through verses 1-4. Pray through what we learn about Jesus here, that he was appointed heir of all things. God made the universe through him. He's the radiance of God's glory, the brilliantness of God's light, the exact representation of God's being. He sustains all things by his powerful word. He provided purification for your sins and mine. And then he sat down, and that image of sitting down, of course, is the image of completion, of finishing. It's all done. Like Jesus said on the cross, it is finished. He sits down at the right hand of the majesty in heaven. And so there is no one superior to him. No one more impressive than him. So incredible. Some of us think of an angel as being little cute, little thing. And maybe there are some angels like that, but the angels in the Bible are not like that. They are majestic. More like, I don't know about this, this is your image of an angel, but it's a bit more like some big bloke with a sword. I mean, that's more like what we see in the Bible, right? One angel killed how many Gentiles? How many of the enemy soldiers? 185,000. That's a lot of people. That's one angel on one day. The angels in the Bible were impressive and somewhat scary. Let's move on. So we haven't got time today to talk about the superior son, and that's in the first few verses here, next few verses in Hebrews 1. And the second point we haven't got time to talk about is how amazing Jesus's justice is, and he has this permanent position of honor, and he's royal in his righteousness. Let's move on. We haven't really got time to talk about how amazing he is as a savior, that he's a lasting Lord, and everything else perishes and wears out, but he doesn't, and his words don't, and he is a worthy recipient of being on the throne there, as we see in the book of Revelation, because he's won the victory. So you can study more of that in your booklets. I'm not going to go and cover that again today. But what I would like to do is show you a short video and then wrap up. Now, this is a video I saw a little while ago. It's a TED Talk. Some of you may know of those. And I'd like you to watch this and think about this as being a way, as you hear what this person is about to share, just for a few minutes, and think about the way you're going to view your life this year. Perhaps you've made some New Year's resolutions. Perhaps you have some goals. Perhaps you have some things you're going to focus on. I'd like to ask you to watch this and think about your priorities for 2018. Let's watch this now.
So imagine a big explosion as you climb through 3,000 feet. Imagine a plane full of smoke. Imagine an engine going clack, 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 clack. Sounds scary. Well, I had a unique seat that day. I was sitting in 1D. I was the only one who could talk to the flight attendants. So I looked at them right away, and they said, no problem, we probably hit some birds. The pilot had already turned the plane around, and we weren't that far. You could see Manhattan. 2 minutes later, three things happen at the same time. The pilot lines up the plane with the Hudson River. It's usually not the route. He turns off the engines. Now imagine being on a plane with no sound. And then he says three words, as unemotional three words as I've ever heard. He says, brace for impact. I didn't have to talk to the flight attendant anymore. I could see in her eyes, it was terror. Life was over. And I want to share with you three things I learned about myself that day. I learned that it all changes in an instant. We have this bucket list, we have these things we want to do in life, and I thought about all the people I wanted to reach out that I didn't, all the fences I wanted to mend, all the experiences I wanted to have and I never did. As I thought about that, later on I came up with a saying, which is, I collect bad wines. Because if the wine is ready and the person is there, I'm opening it. I no longer want to postpone anything in life. And that urgency, that purpose, has really changed my life. The second thing I learned that day, and this is as we clear the George Washington Bridge, which was by not a lot, I thought about, wow, I really feel one real regret. I've lived a good life. In my own humanity and mistakes, I've tried to get better at everything I've tried. But in my humanity, I also allow my ego to get in. And I regretted the time I wasted in things that did not matter with people that matter. And I thought about my relationship with my wife, with my friends, with people. And after, as I reflected on that, I decided to eliminate negative energy from my life. It's not perfect, it's a lot better. I've not had a fight with my wife in 2 years, it feels great. I'm no longer trying to be right. I choose to be happy. The third thing I learned, and this is as your mental clock starts going 15, 14, 13, you can see the water coming, I'm saying, please blow up. Right? I don't want this thing to break in 20 pieces like you've seen in those documentaries. And as we're coming down, I had a sense of, wow, dying is not scary. It's almost like we've been preparing for it our whole lives. But it was very sad. I didn't want to go. I love my life. And that sadness really framed in one thought, which is, I only wish for one thing. I only wish I could see my kids grow up. About a month later, I was in a performance by my daughter, first grader, not much artistic talent, yet. And I'm bawling. I'm crying like a little kid. And it made all the sense in the world to me. I realized at that point, by connecting those two dots, that the only thing that matters in my life is being a great dad. Above all, the only goal I have in life is to be a good dad. I was given the gift of a miracle, of not dying that day. I was given another gift, which was to be able to see into the future and come back and live differently. I challenge you guys that are flying today. Imagine the same thing happens on your plane, and please don't. But imagine, and how would you change? What would you get done that you're waiting to get done because you think you'll be here forever? How would you change your relationships and the negative energy in them? And more than anything, are you being the best parent you can? Thank you.
Thanks for watching this and listening to this. Unfortunately, the last few moments were not recorded, so I'll just tell you what I said to the congregation, which is simply this. Sometimes we get our priorities messed up. And if we do, we don't need a life-threatening experience to get our priorities clear once again. We just need to look at Jesus, the most impressive person I know. I hope this has been helpful. If you want to leave a comment, please do so. I'd love to know what you think about Hebrews chapter 1 or the things that I talked about. And you can contact me via my website, malcolmcox.org, or just leave a message here and I will respond. Thank you so much. Take care and God bless.